So here we are, San Sebastian Film Festival. We are with Casey Lemons and Chiwetel Ejiofor. Casey, good morning. Welcome to Radio Cine.
Good morning.
And Chiwetel, good morning.
Morning. Morning.
You're here to present Talk to Me. It's a film about a radio showman. But talk about this. Okay. Okay, they were winning us some warm water, but actually we didn't need warm water. But how did you discover this radio showman that's started by Don Cheadle, isn't it?
I really became aware of the character through the script. It wasn't Peter Green was not a figure from history that I knew a lot about, which is one of the things that I think is exciting about the movies. In some ways, outside of D.C., you know, in D.C. he was like God. Everybody has a Petey Green story. Outside of D.C., people didn't really know him, you know. So one of the things that was interesting for me in finding him and connecting with his voice and that whole era and this friendship between these two characters was that it wasn't a story that everybody knew, and it was an opportunity to kind of show the audience a way into that place and time, and a way into this very charismatic and famous character, but who's kind of a small part of history, really.
Okay, and Chiwetel, in the film, you are a friend of him, and the person that pushes him to make radio or to deliver his personality. Right?
Yeah, that's right. Dewey Hughes is Petey Green's producer. He's a producer on the radio and brings Petey Green on to the show to do his show, and they have a lot of success, and their friendship sort of grows and is strong, and then it becomes more fractured and difficult as the time goes past, and Petey develops problems of his own, and Dewey tries to kind of accommodate some of them and dismiss others. And that's what the story sort of charts as well. It charts a lot about radio and the time. But it also talks about the personalities and the friendships and the complications in the friendships
as well. That's it. Petey died in 84 of cancer, but actually your character is alive, isn't it?
Dewey is very much alive, yeah.
And did you talk to him? talk to him to deliver your character.
Yeah, very much. I was it was very fortunate, and he was so accommodating, and it was possible to speak to him, and he was very easy, and he sent me materials. I was away in Thailand, and he sent me materials there, and we spoke on the phone, and then I was just lucky enough to get a chance to sit down with him a few times before we started shooting, and talk about different points of his story, and he was just incredibly accommodating and fun to be around, and it was very exciting. I hadn't ever played anybody that was, you know, that's alive or real, actually, I think, come to think of it. And it was just a really great sort of opportunity and time. There's always that sense of responsibility, but he really alleviated a lot of that, actually, just by being kind of so easygoing and just easy to talk to.
I've never been so terrified as when I first showed him the movie. I was absolutely horrifying to have this guy, you know, that you really realize that this is a very important audience member, you know, the person on whose life it's based. And I was a nervous wreck, but he just loved it. I mean, he just loved it. But he was also very valuable in informing us about Petey, because we had a limited amount of materials on Petey. And Petey was a monumental talent, just great. He could have been really bigger than Richard Pryor, you know, a hugely brilliant man. But we did not have that much material. We had some written stuff. I had one concert recording, and a couple of shows, Petey Green's Washington, that I was had access to. Since then, since I made the movie, I've seen many more shows.
But it would have been better that you had it before.
No, it's amazing, because Don Cheadle really nailed it. Like, he totally nails it in the movie. But this is such a genius man, really an incredible voice, and incredibly funny, but also very, very, you know, that acerbic, but in a beautiful way, you know, just, there's this show where he does a show with Howard Stern that's brilliant. Mm-hmm. And it's absolutely brilliant, the two of them. And you really realize how brilliant Howard is, too, because, and the two of them, together is really incredible, but he is very, very talented. And Cheadle nails him, but I think that that was also because of Dewey, because we had Dewey to talk to about Petey's character as well as his own character.
Mm. Okay. You said before we started to record this conversation that 60s is the period you like over all the periods in radio. Why? What had the 60s that we don't have actually?
Well, I think that now radio is much more censored and corporate owned, you know, as the FCC has gotten in control of everything, and also as corporations, conglomerates have bought the smaller companies up. Now I think the agendas are a little different, but when if you had these privately owned little radio stations, you could really get away with more. And mm-hmm. and the way that Sonderling, who Martin Sheen plays in the movie, is able to take a risk and do a Hughes and put Petey Green on the air, I don't know that you could actually do that now. I mean, the things that he said, you can't say on the radio anymore. Mm-hmm. And even on the TV show, you know, even on the internet, you know, Petey Green had to eat a watermelon, you know, you can't say those things. He said them on TV, he said them on the radio. It was a different time. And there's something beautiful about that. And it really was what struck a chord in people, because he was completely unself-centered, unself-censored. It's like no superego, you know? Just like whatever he was thinking kind of came out of his mouth. And for good or bad, I mean, it got him in a lot of trouble, and I think it made it very difficult for his friends and for Dewey, you know, but it was part of what was so appealing about him.
Okay. There's also, for me as a foreigner in the DC, that shocks me when I went there, you know. It's like the first top-rate politicians, and there are also some certain of social iniquities. And, well, I had an experience, I ran to the bike, and it was stolen in 30 minutes in DC. So, yes, you know, when they talk me about DC, I say, I've been...
You had that bike for a long time in DC.
So this is also a part of the film with a PD who was in prison for armed robbery, isn't it?
Yes.
And then he turns to radio, and he is also overcoming that that wall of social inequities or similar.
Well, yeah, it's amazing. I mean, his parents were in jail. I mean, this is an incredible story. Both his mother and his father were in jail, and Dewey's brothers were in jail. I mean, this is it was a hard time, and they came from a rough neighborhood, rough, you know, projects in Dewey's case, and Petey's, they had different projects, but it was a rough world, and so in some ways that's what he was speaking from and what he was speaking to, mm-hmm. that, you know, connected him to that community. It was his particular experience, his particular black experience, you know, that in some ways, I was just thinking of something John Singleton said to me actually about our movie. He said, it's so specific, it's universal. Mm-hmm. And that was something about Petey that was so specific, yeah, that it was universal, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Okay, actually the things that Petey talked about and all the social claims for black, for American people are also in the need of talking of them. There has been improved. My feeling from outside is that from the 60s up to now, the road has been very short, isn't it?
In terms of the improvements,
yes,
and things that have changed.
Yeah,
I think that's right. I think that also one of the things that this film talks about is the relationships within the community, within the African-American community specifically, and the black community at large, I think. And that's really a fascinating part of the story, I think. And that's something that I don't think has changed actually that much in terms of the debates about what roles people play and the way that they do them within corporation, within on the street, within within life and into political sort of happenings. And I think that's really a fascinating part of the journey from the 60s. In terms of the world changing and different things, you know, I think we at times drift in and out of progress, basically. And sometimes progress is a delusion, and then something happens and you realize that actually things haven't progressed as much as you had imagined. And I think that's something that's constantly sort of challenging. But I think it's just, I think what this film says in a small way, and then in a wider way, and exactly that thing about it being so specific that it's universal, is that it talks about on every level about human respect and human dignity. And I think that that's just a vital part of our conversations in general at the moment.
Now that Casey doesn't hear us, you've been working on very different projects, very different directors. You've also done some theater. What are the differences between big budget project, low budget project, working with Casey? What are the differences in this specific film?
Well, now that Casey's left the room, I think I can tell you. I don't know. I mean, I think you're always attracted to interesting projects, and I think interesting characters and directors. You know, and I was fascinated by this project from the moment I looked at it, and it's so extraordinary, and it's so well put together and crafted. And Casey has, from the beginning of it, you know, just created this extraordinary story and revealed it in the most exceptional and beautiful way. And I think that sort of comes through on screen. And I think that it's a testament to her talent that that all the layers of the film are revealed to an audience, and yet they don't go away feeling that they've been berated or that they've had to endure something or be taught something. But it's just a massive insight into political landscape, a historical time, into interpersonal friendships, into relationships, into our understanding of so many different things, racial and not, you know, and I think that's an extraordinary achievement.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and how did you get into a project? Because as you said, you knew PD when you first read the script, and how did you get involved in the film?
Well, the script kept coming to my house. You know, I'm a writer. And
you found it on the mail.
It kept like coming to my house. I can't remember the first time that I actually read it and why I was reading it, but I read several different drafts, and it didn't occur to me all at once. I would read it and I'd think, oh, this is great, you know, and this is really interesting. But it didn't call my name until one day it did, and suddenly, very loudly, it was like, you need to direct this. It was completely clear one day that I needed to direct it, and that was a little bit of a... I thought would be a big battle because it's a very masculine film, and I said, okay, why would anyone assume that I'm going to be able to do this? So I went in very prepared to this meeting. First, I had to wait to get the meeting, you know. So other directors passed on the material, and I'd be like, yes, okay, maybe I'm getting closer, you know. And then finally I got a meeting, and I've got to say, these producers, within two meetings, let me talk them very quickly into the fact that I should direct it. And so it wasn't as difficult as, I went in all uber prepared, you know, like, okay, let me paint a picture. And I got through about a meeting and a half, and in the middle of my second meeting, Mark Gordon, the producer, said, okay. And I was kind of in mid, you know, pitch, and he's like, okay, no, you want to do this. I can see your passion for it. And I basically was saying how I would shape the story and what I thought the essential story was. And to me, it was a friendship story like Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. It reminded me very much of Butch and Sundance. Yeah. because you've got these two people that are very different and rub each other the wrong way, mm-hmm. and yet they have this deep love for each other. Mm-hmm. And so I thought it's one of the great friendship stories. Mm-hmm. And it also has music, you know, the late 60s and 70s is fabulous music, mm-hmm. and goes from, you know, moments of absolute hilarity to tragedy. Mm-hmm. So a very interesting, many interesting things to play with, you know. So basically I talked my way into the movie.
Oh, yeah, perfect. And also, Don Cheadle got very involved into the movie because he'll also been a executive producer, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. Don was very consistent from the first meeting that I had with him, mm-hmm. Where he was like, I don't know, you know? Like, no, it's going to be great. And as soon as he decided that he was going to do it, he was absolutely consistent and deeply, deeply passionate about the project and incredible to work with. I mean, really incredible to work with.
Mm-hmm. How's been the reaction? The film has been screened on the U.S.?
Yes.
Also, and how has been the reaction you've seen of all the audience?
Well, people tend to really love the movie, which is really great and gratifying and fantastic, and they go along with every part of it. And, you know, I was, when I first saw it with an audience in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. it was great. I mean, there were points, I think, at some of the jokes, they just howled. I mean, fell apart laughing. Yeah. And it's always great to sit and with an audience, and you know, because when you're on set and you're doing the bits, you know, you think it's funny. Mm-hmm. You know, you think it's funny, you think it's good, but you can't be sure.
Yeah, sure.
And then to see that kind of reaction is just great. And by the end, you know, they're mm-hmm. So involved in the story. And that's great to take an audience on that kind of journey and to be there and witness it. It's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You started with a film that was a big success in independent filmmaking. So actually, how do you see the scene of independent films? Because it looks like it all has turned into big studios or similar. How's been the overview of this last 10 years, maybe?
It's complicated because every year there are independent films that really break through, mm-hmm. And we're always really excited about those. But I, unfortunately, I'm not completely optimistic about the state that we're in right now. As a matter of fact, I'm fairly sure that if I tried to make Eve's Bayou now, I would have a much more difficult time. Mm-hmm. And even though it was a difficult time then,
yeah.
We did get to put it out and you know, have that kind of response. But now, because everything's so driven by first weekend and, you know, you know, just what you make the first weekend, I think it makes it harder for small films to, you know, get a theater and hold it, you know, because there's all this stuff coming through the pipeline all the time, and you know, you got to make way for the bigger films, and I think it really is hard. It's not that it's harder to make the films, it's harder to distribute and exhibit the films and to stay in a theater and really you know, get your audience to come and respond and to hold those theaters. And so I'm both encouraged and discouraged. I'm encouraged because it's gotten cheaper, you know, it's mm-hmm. gotten cheaper to make films, and there are great filmmakers coming through, and yet it's become a little bit more Hollywoodized, especially in the States, you know, more geared towards bigger films, don't you think?
Yeah, it's incredible at the moment. I think the pressure that is on a film to come in on the weekend, and and then somehow that, you know, denotes whether other people will get to see the film, how long the film sort of survives in the cinema, and I think it's something that's definitely going to hurt the nature of filmmaking. I mean, it's a real shame that so much is kind of decided, you know, just on the revenue of a picture, and it doesn't seem to be much way out of it, because it's a situation that seems to be sort of getting worse. I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, I mean, you can't introduce legislation. You know? Just say, my picture has to stay in the cinema and Transformers can't come in. You know? It's like, you know, it's not going to work out. So, you know, it's sort of a conundrum. But, you know, I just think we'll just carry on pushing forward. And then, you know, like Casey says, occasionally there's some those blips on the radar of independent films that find an audience and really do that sort of magic thing where, you know, you start small and then just roll on and get bigger and bigger and, you know, take up more cinema screens. But it happens infrequently, but we still sort of, you know, look for that. Those little diamonds in the rough, you know, and that's, you know, that's, isn't cinema about hoping and dreams and so on? So, you know, that's what we continue to do, yeah.
So now the last question is about your next films, because we think they are going to be that kind of films that get greater and good films. And what are your new projects?
I'm doing a film for Picture House, and I'm really excited about it. It has to do with the civil rights movement in 1963, and I'm hoping Chiwetel will be in it. but it's something I'm really excited about, a historical piece, but very beautiful story that most people don't know. Mm-hmm. Has to do with the Children's Crusade in Birmingham, Alabama. So it's very beautiful.
Uh-huh. So actually your pre-production or your...
No, right now I'm still writing and researching.
Okay. Okay. And, well, you have some different projects, isn't it?
Well, yeah, there's a couple of, American Gangsters coming out right soon. And also I just finished shooting Red Belt, which is David Mamet's film.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
Los Angeles, which was exciting. So that'd be arriving next year. But my immediate plans are to go back onto the stage in London.
Oh,
I'm going to do Othello at the Don Bar.
Othello from when? What date?
I start the. It'll open December 4th at the Don Bar Warehouse in Covent Garden in London, and run through till February 22nd.
Okay, I take notes, so
note it down.
If we can see you. Okay, thank you very much, and congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.